I remember that John Keats, the English poet, looked at a Grecian urn one time, and he saw little figures on it playing music. And he said something like this, "Heard melodies are sweet, but those unheard are sweeter. Therefore, ye soft pipes, play on." Your bulletin says that the flowers today are furnished by Ada Clifton. They are not visible because there was a miscommunication. Seen flowers are lovely. Those unseen are lovelier still. Let your imagination create them up here where they usually are. You remember when you were a child and some playmate called you by a teasing nickname? Or shouted sissy, or coward. And you stuck your tongue out and shouted back one of the few proverbs you had learned. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never harm me. I can remember how delightful that felt in my mouth and sounded to my ears, very smug and superior, with a nice little rhyme and a pinch of rhythm, sometimes the only defense I could come up with. The only problem, as I found out later, was that my cute little proverb was false. Sticks and stones may break your bones, all right, but words can totally destroy you. I think by the time we're grown up, another proverb begins to make more sense. This one from Hebrew Scripture. Many have been killed by the sword, but not so many as by the tongue. The tongue in that proverb is seen as a weapon which has maimed or killed more than a weapon of war. All those millions in the human past who have been wounded by hateful talk, ruined by careless gossip, crippled by deliberate slander. But it would be just as true, I think, to say that more of us have hurt ourselves by our own careless words than have ever been wounded in war. There surely cannot be anyone in this room who hasn't said with a rueful smile or with a broken heart, "Oh, how I wish I had never said that." I know one who has, and I suppose his experience to be typical of yours. He has slowly, slowly improved, but he had so far to come that he is still not where he wishes to be. He used to print the letters KMS on the back of his hand, hoping that it would help him to remember. Keep mouth shut. Right after he had just put his foot there. And one day he saw a phrase in Latin he thought might help, so he wrote video et taceo on the back of his hand for a few weeks. Look, but keep quiet. That didn't help much either. Maybe only getting older helps. Sometimes not even that. The Bible, I notice, is much interested in the power of language. Another Hebrew proverb says, "Both glory and disgrace come from speaking." Think how true that paradox is. There was Jesus of Nazareth who spoke so well that men marveled at his words and followed him into new lives of love and compassion, generosity and kindness. But there was Hitler, whose rhetoric, prompted, shaped by that same organ of the body, inflamed his disciples with such hellish fire that 6 million Jews, 20 million Russians and millions more from all major nations in the world died in the wars he started. I really think the British people might have lost their will in the worst days of World War II if there had been no one to rally them, as Churchill did in his stirring promise of what they could save through blood, sweat, toil, and tears. But the air around us, in and out of this building right now, is filled with the voices of demagogues and religious fanatics who are provoking people to hatred and violence every single day with the same instrument, the tongue. Words have power over our lives in ways too many to count. I believe it so much that I ask my freshman class to do a rather old-fashioned thing. They have to keep a vocabulary building notebook, and I use every trick I know to make them believe that language is power. That times will come when they would give almost anything to be able to say exactly what they mean, to find the perfect word without hurting someone irretrievably with the wrong one, without offending a partner or a boss, without messing things up so terribly they never can be put quite right again. They only begin to believe it, unfortunately, about 10 years after they leave school. I suppose there is so much chatter in our culture, such a torrent of insignificant talk on television, at parties, on the street, that we learn, before we are conscious of it, to regard language lightly. Just words, we say disparagingly. Anybody can talk. Oh, I know he said that. Anybody could say that. We want deeds, not words. We play down the importance of language, that extraordinary miracle that makes us unique among the other creatures that creep and crawl and swim and fly on this planet. So in some way, in every sermon, and in some way in every semester, I preach the same gospel. Feel the weight of words on your tongue, because they have different bulk. Taste their bitterness, their sweetness, their stinging acidity. Smell them, hear their music. Instead of killing their identity in a monotone or running the eye past them on a page as if one were no different from another, do, in short, what Jessica Tinsman did this morning that delighted you so. All of which now brings me at last to the book of James, from which we are getting ideas for this series of sermons. Listen to James. Not many of you, this is going to hurt several of us, not many of you should become teachers. You should know that those of us who teach will bear a greater responsibility than others. He doesn't have to tell us why. We know. Because we talk. Because we use the tongue. And because the tongue has such enormous potential for doing good or evil. It's one thing to ship grain, or sell cars, or build boxes. It is another and fearful thing to spend each day of your life building bridges of words to link one person with another. What if a careless word destroys some fragile human hope. There are days when those of us who teach fret and worry for hours about those words that fluttered in the classroom and floated in the church and took on a life when they entered someone's mind that we could not predict. Fortunately, although James doesn't mention it, there is also a great reward. You meet someone in a strange city. You probably don't remember this, he tells you, but you said something to me one day, 20 years ago, and I never forgot it. It changed my life. I look at a person who says that to me, and I have to shake off an impulse to shudder at the sheer terror and risk of living as I have lived all my life in the world of words. Words launched by the tongue, that organ mostly hidden, anchored firmly at one end, not very attractive, a few ounces of energy, but oh, what a force. When he thinks about that, James really gets going. He tells us how a small bit can control a huge horse. How an ocean liner is guided by a relatively little rudder. How the tiny tongue, too, has power out of all proportion to its size. Just think, he says, what a roaring fire is kindled with one tiny match. The tongue, too, and he is really ascending toward his verbal climax now, the tongue, too, is a flame setting the world afire with mischief, hell's blowtorch, making life an inferno. It's slightly lopsided. Logic, hyperbolic, overstated, but it demands our attention. And we know that if it is not the whole truth, it is a great deal of the bitter truth. I've wished sometimes he had stressed the positive a little more. How a couple of words can create a whole institution. A nervous young man says, I do. And a nervous young woman says, I will. And a new institution is added to society. Just words. Or how a single word can change the climate. A minister I know was making hospital calls one day, and ahead of him there was another man walking down the hall. And if that man saw a door open, he would stick his head in for a second. My friend thought he heard a sound, and then the man would walk on and do it again. My friend said, I got close enough. I hurried up and got close enough to hear him. He was saying, hello. That's all. Hello. I was curious. So when he went on by, I stuck my head in to see what that did. And he said, I saw times when that word went in and turned on the light, straightened the covers, opened the blinds, plumped to the pillows, changed the face of a patient. Just a word. One night, Jesus sat with his friends. They ate and talked, and he said, pass me what's left of that butt end of bread, that piece of loaf. They handed it to him. Is there anything left in that goblet? They passed it over. And he said some words about the bread and the wine and a supper, A very ordinary supper became a sacrament because he said so. Because the words he spoke were so poignant that they have been engraved on hearts and on communion tables ever since. When you say something, you may create a whole new world of experience for somebody. She was the only girl, and pretty, and still new at the dating game. She said to her folks, "We're not going to be out late after the game. We ought to be back by, well, let's see, we'll stop to get a hamburger. We ought to be in by 11:30. "All right. But we expect you here by 11:30. 11:30 comes, and no daughter. "Oh, well," Dad says to Mom, "she'll be here," playing strong father and fighting his own rising fear. 11:45, and Mom says, "Wonder what's wrong?" "Don't worry. Be calm. Just some little delay." Midnight. "You think we ought to call the highway patrol?" "No, no," he says. "No need to get hysterical." "Should I call the other set of parents?" "No, stay off the phone. She may be trying to call us." 1:30. Nothing. The phone rings. It's one of the other parents. There's a quick agreement to get off the phone in case the kids call. 2:30. "If they don't call soon," Dad says, "I will call the police." His voice is unsteady. He's walking more than he sits. 2:45. The phone rings. "Daddy?" Do I have to explain the power of a word? "Daddy, our car broke down. We're at this farmhouse and a nice man's working on it. This lady has fed us. She wants you to talk to her so you will know everything's okay." Just words. Anybody could say that. "Daddy, we're here at this farmhouse." Just words. You don't believe that. They may not be worth anything on a stock market ticker tape, but they're worth $500,000 at 2:45 in the morning. Nothing is ever just words. Words create whole new worlds, change lives. Reach out and touch someone. The person who came up with that slogan knew exactly where we live. Reach out and touch someone with a word. And the ad shows us a pair of grandparents. The whirlwind of home life, only a fading memory. Shows us a girl lonely in her first big city job. Shows us a young soldier away for the first time from his wife. We think of the silence in which so many live, the silence of having no one. And we know suddenly that when we speak, even over the phone, we throw a stone against the clear glass of silence. We interrupt someone's world with our voice, with our presence, with the blessing of our life and our love. I was once, it was a while back, one of those things called a boy preacher. When I first went off to college, I think they should be banned, but I was one of them. I remember going out on appointments, and then after the church service, going home for lunch and a long afternoon in somebody's house. One day in Tennessee, it was an old lady living alone who invited me. She showed me the pictures of her children and grandchildren in that big house once filled with family, once ringing with laughter. She said after a while, "You sit in the library and study if you like, or read the paper. I'll get lunch ready." I was in no mood to read. I'd been cooped up all morning. I wanted to move about. I walked in to help, and I found her in the big dining room, not the kitchen. She'd opened the big chest, gotten out the china and the tablecloth. I wasn't very smart. So I said, "Why don't we just eat in the kitchen?" I thought it was the right thing to say, so I would not be too much trouble to her. But she went right on getting out the cloth napkins and the silver rings. "Please don't go to all this trouble," I said, still being a fool. A nice fool, maybe, but a fool. "You go sit down," she said, "till I get it ready." And finally she called, "It's ready." So we went in together and sat in the dining room, and she said, "We have twice as many for dinner today as we've had in months." I finally caught on. And we had a banquet, she and I, and we talked until the middle of the afternoon. I hoped that night, when I got back to school, that somewhere in the torrent of words I had said a few that were right. Isn't it strange how many put-downs we have for language? Anybody can talk. Just words. Judgments we make because so much of the time we do make language cheap. And some talk is easy. "Quit riding your bicycle across my lawn." "Has the mail come yet?" "You said you'd iron my shirt." But what's hard is to talk with meaning, feel things deeply enough, and the voice goes. You shuffle your feet, you move your hands helplessly, speech comes up with so much effort it wears you out. Have you talked to your folks about this? No. Why not? I can't make the words come out. Why do we say talk is cheap when it can be so hard, so profound, so difficult? "Hi, nice day. Think it's going to rain?" That's not hard. What's hard is when I walk into the hospital room and I'm thinking of a real moment, and a fine, decent, talented man says, "Well, Doc says it's cancer of the pancreas and there's nothing he can do." Oddly enough, the doctor who said that is here today. "I have a few weeks to live." I'm a man of words. I live and die by the word, but I've never yet learned the perfect thing to say in that moment. "Bob, the report came from the lab today on Eileen, and it's malignant." Long, long silence. Talk is cheap. I can't buy a word to save my life. Now we begin to understand the passion of James. The word that can start a quarrel, destroy a love, break up a home, begin a war. The word that can save someone from despair. Arouse a sleeping nation against prejudice and injustice. Start feet marching on the way to peace and brotherhood. The word that breaks the silence of somebody's lonely world. Somebody says to us, "You people talk. You talk in church. You think you're going to change something by talking. It won't work." What do you think? Do you believe it's possible for you to go to somebody and say something to that person that would make a difference? Are you going to?